entity that abides by the law can see the administration becoming more powerful and play the crucial role for the development of the country. In order to realize this goal, I remain committed to the visions delineated by the leader, the general policies submitted by the leader. If we believe in this future vision, if we fulfill and operationalize the leader's policies, we will make considerable progress.
As Xi'an said, he seeks a powerful administration to fulfill its responsibilities. He describes serving the people as the main duty of his administration, promising justice and fairness. Pezeshkian defeated ex-nuclear negotiator Saeed Jalili in the second round of the presidential election on July the 5th. The 69-year-old replaces Ebrahim Raisi, who was martyred in a helicopter crash in northwestern Iran in May. Political commentator Fuad Ezzati expands on the remarks by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei.
Iran has a democracy. We elect presidents with direct popular vote. And Mr. Pezeshkian won the election. A lot of Western pundits, news outlets, were saying that since he's a reformist, he's not going to be elected. So shame on them. Today his presidency starts. And both in his speech and the leader's speech, you could identify themes that would direct Mr. Pezeshkian's tenure as Iran's president. I think he is going to try to fulfill the promises that he made during his campaign. And the country's leader, as you just heard, is in line with his full support for the new administration. The recommendation that the leader had was for Mr. Pezeshkian to focus on the economic improvement of the country. And foreign policy, the leader referred to the idea of not waiting for some event outside Iran to engage in the daily business of the country.
Well, anger erupts in the occupied Golan Heights over the arrival of Israeli ministers for the funerals of victims of Saturday's rocket attack, with protesters demanding the ministers leave the area. Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich was met with shouts of "Get out of here, criminal," as he attended the memorial service. The Economy Minister Nir Barakat and the Environment Minister Idit Silman also faced angry chants from the crowd. Participants at the ceremony condemned the Israeli ministers, saying they came to dance on the blood of their children. The funerals were held for 11 of the 12 people who lost their lives in a rocket attack the Israeli regime blamed on Hezbollah. The Lebanese resistance group, however, has denied having any role in the attack, warning the regime against using the incident as an excuse for new adventures in Lebanon. Well, Iran has warned that any foolish Israeli move against Lebanon can spread instability, insecurity, and the flames of war in the region. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the regime would be responsible for the unforeseen consequences of such a move. He said Israel has fabricated the scenario to divert global attention from its widespread crimes against Palestinians. The Iranian foreign ministry spokesman also urged the U.S. to stop Israel from starting a new war whose flames will engulf the Zionists. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in southern Lebanon, Mariam Saleh, and she talked about a little bit more about the escalation between Hezbollah and Israel.
Well, it's surprisingly calm up until now, despite some of the Israeli shelling that we witnessed and we heard throughout the night, actually, even in areas that are close to cities like Tyre, for example, which is densely populated. And this is an area which is not usually, of course, targeted by the Israelis. We know that they targeted the area of Abbasiyeh, which is one of the towns within the district of the Tyre, the city of Tyre. And we know from sources that what was targeted and what was shelled and destroyed, actually, was a medical supplies facility, and nothing that was, there were no casualties, there was no one there, it's not something military. So it seemed that the Israelis were attempting to show force in some areas and just trying to target certain places. There were also several attacks in even the west, the Bekaa area in Tharaya. We know that there were also there was also Israeli shelling in that area as well. However, we do know as well from Israeli media that the Israeli regime's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is supposed to be arriving in the regime today, later at 4 p.m., and will be meeting with the cabinet, they say, in order to make the right decision or to make some sort of a decision concerning the issue of Lebanon. And we have that continuous threats, of course, from the Israeli media, from the Israeli, military spokesperson, from the officials saying that Hezbollah will be punished or Hezbollah will have to pay the price for what happened yesterday, in addition to the fact that they are saying that this rocket is an Iranian rocket, and it is, of course, with the continuous Israeli propaganda, especially Netanyahu's propaganda, trying to play on the issue of the Iranian support for the resistance, saying that it is the Iranian rocket. It was the Hezbollah forces, naming even the logistic commander of Hezbollah, who was responsible for the launching of these rockets. And so all of these are basically trying to frame the resistance in a manner where they would probably strike Lebanon in sort of a way that would, where they would say that this is a retaliation.
Meanwhile, more Palestinians are falling victim to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza as the regime in Tel Aviv goes on with its unrelenting air and artillery strikes on the besieged territory. At least one more Palestinian was killed and several others wounded in an Israeli bombing of an industrial area southwest of Gaza City. In a separate airstrike in the southern town of Abasan, a child was killed after regime warplanes targeted a residential building. The Israeli military also targeted several areas elsewhere in the strip, leaving an unknown number of Palestinians dead and injured. Famine is also taking its toll in Gaza, with many Palestinians, mostly children, dying of severe hunger and malnutrition. Israeli aggression on Gaza began last October. Since then, more than 39,300 people have been killed and over 90,000 others injured. Muti Abu Musab is our correspondent in Gaza, and he's provided further details regarding the recent Israeli air and artillery attacks in the coastal territory. Let's take a listen.
Essentially, the Israeli occupation forces continue to target multiple areas of Gaza Strip, basically the eastern part of Khan Yunis City. As you know, those areas are still the focal areas of the ongoing military operation targeting the eastern part of Khan Yunis City. More Israeli airstrikes, in addition to the chronic artillery shelling, actually targeted those areas, including the major parts of the eastern part of Khan Yunis City. We are talking about Beni Suhaila, in addition to Abasan and Al-Karara neighborhoods. They are still under incessant attacks of the Israeli strikes. The last one, the fish attack, took place in Beni Suhaila neighborhood, targeted a mosque, which was completely destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. In the meantime, five Palestinian civilians were extracted, killed from the rubble of the destroyed houses in Beni Suhaila neighborhood. Needless to mention that dozens of the Palestinian people are still believed missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses, while the Israeli occupation forces are still preventing the medical staff, in addition to the civil defense crews, from reaching those areas in order to evacuate the dead bodies. Those attacks are still incessant. We are talking about continuous and chronic artillery shelling targeting those areas, while the Israeli snipers are still topping multiple residential buildings, shooting at everyone moving in those areas. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces actually detonated multiple residential buildings and the squares in the Al-Karara neighborhood, which is located in the eastern part of Khan Yunis, as you know. When it comes to Rafah City, the Israeli occupation forces continue to wage more air strikes and attacks against the western part of the city. More residential squares were detonated and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces.
The protesters have booed the Israeli anthem at the Olympics amid growing anger over the regime's participation in the Games. The jeers and pro-Palestinian chants came before a football match between Israel and Paraguay. Protesters also held up genocide Olympic signs and waved Palestinian flags, Israel's anthem, and its players were also booed during the team's Olympic opener against Mali. There has been heavy security presence around the Israeli contingent in Paris. That's because of the persisting protests over the regime's participation in the Games, despite widespread calls to ban it for its genocide in Gaza. Iran Saadi Foundation is hosting a special teacher training event in Tehran. The foundation, which is in charge of promoting Persian language across the world, is hosting guests and enthusiasts from Iran and 12 other countries. Our correspondent Fatima Masumi brings us the details.
The summer school is bringing together around 50 advanced Persian learners from different parts of the world, including Russia, Turkey, Bosnia, Greece, Serbia, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Thailand, Georgia, Armenia, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. The gathering has been organized in line with the policies of the foundation to promote the Persian language and literature and teaching it to non-Persian speakers.
The Saadi Foundation, from the very beginning, has always held a summer school to boost the language of foreign Persian learners. Due to the corona pandemic, this program had stopped. We are happy now that once again we are holding the program this year. Persian learners from various countries have been invited to Iran to improve their knowledge and also get acquainted with the Iranian culture and society.
Saadi is widely known as one of the four greatest poets of Persian literature. He has earned the nickname the Master of Speech for how he crafted his masterpiece Gulistan, a landmark of Persian literature and one of the most influential works of prose in Persian literary tradition. His other magnum opus is Bustan, a book of poetry. His work makes him one of the pillars of the solid foundation of Persian language and literature, both in poetry and prose, to an extent that many Saadi scholars think Persian speakers are now speaking in the language of Saadi.
Well, I'm Sudan from Russia, and I'm studying the Persian language because I think that it's really important for understanding the Middle East and the Islamic culture. Also, speaking about myself, I'm an Arabic language and also the Persian. And Ben Zariman, in my opinion, the Persian is more beautiful, it's slightly and really melodic. And so I think that it's really nice to read and to declamate the Saadi, Hafez, Rumi, and of course Omar Khayyam. So, yes, it is.
I am Soner Sakan. I am from Armenia. I am teaching Armenia in Persian in Armenian schools. Persian is where Armenian school children are very interested in Persian, Persian culture and Iran. And as Iran is our neighbor country, it's very interesting for them to learn its language.
Saadi's aphorisms, derived from the teachings of the Quran and Hadith, have always been a gold standard for learners. Iran's Saadi Foundation is a cultural academy aimed at promoting the Persian language across the world. It holds several Persian courses, both in Iran and abroad. Despite huge efforts, there are still unknown aspects of Saadi's personality and the brilliance of his art. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
And with that report, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. And thanks so much for staying with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Every empire falls. Its collapse becomes inevitable once its rulers lose all sense of how absurd and abhorrent they have become. Only a failing U.S. empire would be so blind as to cheer child-killing Netanyahu and his genocide. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the first part. Middle East Iron Road. There is only one country in the world right now, in the midst of the Zionist regime's slaughter in Gaza, where Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is guaranteed dozens of standing ovations from the vast majority of its elected representatives. It is the United States regime. Recently, Netanyahu was backslapped, glad-handed, whooped and cheered as he slowly made his way, hailed at every step as a conquering so-called hero, to the podium of the U.S. Congress. This was the same Netanyahu who has overseen, during the past 10 months, slaughter so far of some 40,000 Palestinians, around half of them women and children. More than 21,000 other children are reported missing, most of them likely dead on the rubble. It was the same Netanyahu who leveled the strip of territory, originally home to 2.3 million Palestinians, that is expected to take 80 years to rebuild at a cost of at least $50 billion. It was the same Netanyahu who has destroyed every hospital and university in Gaza and bombed almost all of its schools that were serving as shelters for families made homeless by other Israeli regime bombs. It was the same Netanyahu whose arrest is being sought by the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity, accused of using starvation as a weapon of war by imposing an aid blockade that has engineered a famine across Gaza. It It was the same Netanyahu whose government was found recently by the International Court of Justice to have been intensifying Israel's apartheid rule over the Palestinian people in an act of long-term aggression. It was the same Netanyahu whose government is standing trial for committing what the ICJ, the world's highest judicial body, has termed genocide. And yet, there was just one visible protester in the congressional chamber. Rashida Tlaib, the only U.S. legislator of Palestinian heritage, sat silently grasping a small black sign. On one side, it said, war criminal. On the other side, guilty of genocide. One person among hundreds mutely trying to point out that the emperor was naked. Indeed, the optics were stark. This looked less like a visit by a foreign leader than a decorated elder general being welcomed back to the Senate in ancient Rome, or a gray-haired British viceroy from India embraced in the motherland's parliament after brutally subduing the barbarians on the fringes of empire. And this was a scene familiar from history books of imperial brutality and colonial savagery, recast by the seat of the Imperium as valor, honor, civilization. And it looked every bit as absurd and abhorrent as it does when we look back on what happened 200 or 2,000 years ago. It was a reminder that despite self-serving claims of progress and humanitarianism, our world is not very different from the way it has been for thousands of years. It was a reminder that power elites like to celebrate the demonstration of their power. Cocooned both from the horrors faced by those crushed by their might and from the clamor of protest of those horrified by the infliction of so much suffering, it was a reminder that this is not a war between the fabricated and child-killing regime of Israel and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, let alone, as child-killer Netanyahu would have us believe, a battle for civilization between the Judeo-Christian world and the Islamic world. This is a U.S. imperial war, part of its military campaign for global full-spectrum dominance carried out by Washington's most favored client state. The Gaza genocide is fully a U.S. genocide, armed by Washington, paid for by Washington, given diplomatic cover by Washington, and as the scenes in Congress underline, cheered on by Washington. Or as Netanyahu stated in a moment of unintentional candor to Congress, our enemies are your enemy, our fight is your fight, and our victory will be your victory. The Zionist regime is Washington's largest military outpost in oil-rich West Asia region. The Israeli regime army is the Pentagon's main battalion in that strategically important region, and Netanyahu is the outpost commander-in-chief. What is vital to Washington elites is that outpost is supported at all costs, that it doesn't fall to the barbarians. There was another small moment of inadvertent truth amid Netanyahu's outpouring of lies. The Israeli regime prime minister stated that what was happening in Gaza was a clash between barbarism and civilization. He was not wrong. On the one side, there is the barbarism of the current joint Israeli-U.S. genocide against the people of Gaza, a dramatic escalation of the 17-year Israeli regime siege of the enclave that preceded it, and the decades of belligerent rule under an Israeli regime system of apartheid before that. On the other side, there are the embattled few desperately trying to safeguard the West's professed values of civilization, of international humanitarian law, of the protection of the weak and vulnerable, of the rights of children. The U.S. Congress decisively showed where it stood with barbarism. Netanyahu has become the most feted foreign leader in U.S. history, invited to speak to Congress 4 times, surpassing even Britain's wartime leader, Winston Churchill. He's fully Washington's creature. His savagery, his monstrousness is entirely made in America. As he implored his U.S. handlers, give us the tools faster and we will finish the job faster. Finish the job of genocide.
Ocean of Dua.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you in this edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition, we will try to talk about dozens of supplications from the Holy Quran that can be recited during the Qunut in everyday prayers and Salat. So stay with us. We can also recite the 24th verse of chapter Qasas, رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. This, dear listeners, is the ending part of the 24th verse. رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. O Lord, verily, I have the need of what you have sent me of the good. After leaving the city of Pharaohs, Prophet Moses reached Midian, where he found a whole tribe of men watering their sheep. He saw that 2 girls were keeping back their flocks apart from those men, and they weren't approaching that well. After some questions, he found that as their father was a very old man, and they didn't have any other helps, they had to wait till the shepherds go away. So Moses did this. He immediately watered their flock for them and recited this dua, رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. O Lord, verily I have the need of what you have sent me of the good. Afterwards, the father of these 2 girls, who was also a prophet, hired him and gave him a land to till. Later, Moses married one of these 2 girls. So it can be inferred from this verse, this part of the verse actually, that first we have to do our responsibility. We have to do our best. Then, what do? Then we ask the Almighty Allah.
So he watered their flocks for them. Then he went back to the shade and said, My Lord, indeed I am, for whatever good you would send down to me, in need.
So the Prophet Moses did honestly what he could for those 2 girls, and then he asked the Almighty Allah for his problem. رَبِّ إِنِّي لِمَا أَنزَلْتَ إِلَيَّ مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَقِيرٍ. He didn't ask those 2 girls for watering. or food or water or anything. He referred to God and no one else for solving his own problem. So Moses watered those girls' sheep, but he didn't ask them. He didn't ask these two girls for help. So we have to ask the Almighty Allah for everything. Even a simple meal of the day can be asked and should be asked, actually, from the Almighty Allah. And it is really interesting that what he did was that he referred to the Almighty Allah. But it has another aspect as well. He didn't ask the Almighty Allah what he needed, actually. He just said, Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. O Lord, I have the need of what you have sent me of the good. He didn't ask the Almighty Allah to give him some water or to give him some food to eat. He just asked him and told him in general that whatever the Almighty Allah saw best for him, he was in need of that. So he said, of the good, min khayrin faqir, I need whatever you sent me of the good. So after all these things being said, dear listeners, we should recite this dua whenever we have a good deed. Actually, whenever it is revealed unto us to do a good deed, because the Almighty Allah certainly gives us the recompense of whatever good we do. You may have seen some people around you that after doing the first part of the good action, after doing the simplest action of the good deed, which is apparently good, they are proud of themselves and they think that they're better than anyone. For example, we have some people who in their minds think that since because they help some poor or go to mosque to say their prayers or they're helping their parents, they're better than anyone around them. But the thing that they never know and they can never be sure of is that whether I am better than the one sitting right next to me. I can never be sure of the inward of the person I'm watching.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God and the mercy will God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. Feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So I am always in need of the Almighty Allah's favors. And as this verse says, Rabbi inni lima anzalta ilayya min khayrin faqir. O Lord, verily I have the need of what you have sent me of the good. It is also said that to get a lawful, profitable occupation in a new country, one must recite this dua. And this dua can also be recited at least 7 times after every wajib salat. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The World Health Organization has said there was a high risk of the polio virus spreading across the Gaza Strip and beyond its border due to the dire health and sanitation situation in the war-ravaged Palestinian enclave. Health officials say outbreak could spill over into other territories if not controlled. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iRoads, the World Health Organization, WHO, has warned of the spread of polio across the Gaza Strip and possibly further afield as a result of collapsing sanitation in the Palestinian enclave. The Zionist regime has also begun offering polio vaccinations to its troops fighting in Gaza after remnants of the virus were found in test samples from the region. Idil Saparabekov, WHO team lead for health emergencies in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, said circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus type 2 had been isolated from environmental samples from sewage. He told reporters in Geneva via video link from Al-Quds, there is a high risk of a spreading of the circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus in Gaza, not only because of the detection, but because of the very dire situation with the water sanitation. Adding, it may also spill over internationally at a very high point. He added that workers from WHO and the UN's children agency UNICEF were scheduled to arrive in Gaza to collect human stool samples as part of a risk assessment. He said he hoped this would be completed before the end of the week and allow recommendations to be issued, including the need for a mass vaccination campaign, as well as what kind of vaccine should be used and what the age group of the population that will need to be vaccinated. Since the Zionist regime began its bombardment of Gaza in October, there have been repeated warnings about the possible outbreak of viral epidemics as a result of the destruction of health, water, and sewage infrastructure. Last week, the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, said its hospital and all health facilities in southern Gaza were at breaking point and unable to treat those suffering life-threatening wounds. The organization said in a statement that its 60-bed field hospital in Rafah was nearly at capacity following mass casualty events, including deadly Israeli regime strikes on Al-Mawasi refugee camp, which killed at least 90 Palestinians last week. The Red Cross said it took in 26 people requiring hospitalization for shrapnel and other wounds following the attack. It added that the overwhelming pressure was forcing doctors to make difficult choices on who gets treated. Saparabekov said he was extremely worried about an outbreak happening in Gaza, he explained, and this is not only polio, different outbreaks of communicable diseases. The Zionist regime's military said recently that it was offering a broad vaccination operation for all ground troops, both regular and reserves. Meanwhile, Anadolu Agency wrote, an academic from the University of Copenhagen has warned that the recently found poliovirus in Gaza has the potential to spread across the West Asia region. Flemming Conradsen, a professor of global health, told Danish state news media outlet recently, it is a disease that the whole world is trying to stand together to eradicate. Obviously, if it spreads in the Middle East, then it is something you are nervous about. Conradsen expressed his concerns over the state of health sector in Gaza. He said, what is happening in Gaza now is yet another indicator that the health infrastructure and hygiene have broken down. The professor added, what we are currently seeing throughout Gaza is that the health situation is so incredibly poor. There is no energy, infrastructure, or chemicals to, for example, do water purification, waste water treatment, or handle waste. Malcolm Robson said that Israel should be worried about reports of the polio virus because there remains a huge risk that in the coming days polio can spread to other countries in the region. He said, "It is really the disease that historically has created such an incredible amount of suffering and financial burden. It is definitely something that is feared, also in Israel, because you don't want the disease to spread either." The World Health Organization has reported that poliovirus variant 2 has been found in at least 6 wastewater samples in Gaza. The samples have been collected from 2 different locations, Khan Yunis in the south and in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza Strip. The samples were collected in June, and so far no people have been treated for paralysis or other symptoms.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question which is very important and also a point of contention amongst various Islamic sects. And that question is regarding whether or not it is permissible to visit the graves of Muslims in general, and also in particular visiting the graves of religious personalities such as the Prophet or the Imams and also the religious scholars. A lot of Muslim sects today believe that such an act is impermissible and an instance of polytheism. However, the people who are the followers of the school of thought of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, they are of the opinion that no, this is something permissible. Today we're going to be examining this question, of course, in the light of the Hadith and also the Quran. In this connection, we have a number of Hadiths which can, guide us to the resolution of this problem. In one beautiful prophetic hadith, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam has been reported as having said, "I am informed about the one who sends greeting on me from any part of the earth, whereas I personally listen to the one who greets me at my grave." This is a very beautiful hadith in the sense that not only does it convey the permissibility of visiting the grave of, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but it also specifically says that when a person visits the grave of the Prophet and pays his homage and salams to him, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam hears this person, and obviously if he hears a person greeting him, he will respond to him. This is one hadith. In another hadith, the Holy Prophet Muhammad has been reported as having been asked about his grandson Hassan ibn Ali alayhi salam. He was asked by Imam Hassan, "O father, what is the reward of one who visits you?" To which he replied, "My son, he who visits me during my life, or after my death, or visits your father, or your brother, or yourself, becomes deserving of my visiting him on the day of resurrection, when I will rid him of his sins. Right, so this, not only it does it legitimize the visitation of the graves of the Prophet and the, you know, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, but it also explicitly says that this is a meritorious act which causes the person who performs it to deserve otherworldly a reward in the hereafter. In the of course, we would like to, by way of just to note here, when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says that I will rid him of his sins, he is referring to the sins, personal sins, which are not instances of the usurpation of the rights of other human beings. For that, a person is also required to ask the forgiveness of the person whose rights he has usurped. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the permissibility of visitation of the graves of Muslims in the light of the Hadith and the Quran. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key, an IRIB English radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Islamic Revolution endorses Masoud Pezeshkian as Iran's ninth president, authorizing him to form his administration. Israel's airstrikes and artillery fire continue to pound various areas across Gaza as the death toll from the regime's genocide passes 39,300. Anger erupts in the occupied Golan Heights over the arrival of Israeli ministers for the funerals of victims of Saturday's rocket attack, with protesters demanding them to leave the area. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the leader of the Islamic Revolution has called on the new Iranian administration to engage with other countries, but to rely on domestic capabilities. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks after endorsing Masoud Pezeshkian as Iran's ninth president. The leader said the administration must give priority to ties with neighbors, countries that expand Iran's diplomatic reach, including in Asia and in Africa, and governments that have helped Iran against foreign pressure. Ayatollah Khamenei also called for attention to the economy and the livelihood of the people as a key domestic priority. He said everyone must avoid division and schisms, and called on parliament and the judiciary to help the new administration fulfill its objectives. Also speaking during the endorsement ceremony, Iran's new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, said the country can overcome its problems with convergence and unity.
Only through convergence and law adhering within the administration will be able to overcome the difficulties and in this way realize people's wishes.